I really liked the approach that first Germany took, and then the European Commission said in their communication that renewables should be treated as being in overriding public interest. And this sort of phrasing makes all permitting easier. And I think this is what we really need in Poland. It's not just removing the obstacles that we put in place before, but really reforming the permitting regime, really making it easier to put these things in place, all of them.
Hello and welcome to Energy Unplugged by Aurora. This podcast features various experts from Aurora having in-depth conversations with key industry leaders, policymakers, and academics from all over the world. It explores the hottest topics across the energy market and gives a unique perspective on major energy issues.
Welcome to Energy Unplugged. I'm Hans König, in charge of Aurora's Berlin office, and I'm joined today by Monika Morawiecka. Welcome, Monika. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Hans. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. To briefly introduce our guests, Monika is one of the leading voices of the Polish energy sector. She's now a senior advisor at the Regulatory Assistance Project, or RAP, a think tank that is advising predominantly governments in creating better energy sector regulation. Prior to that, she's had a very distinguished career spanning more than 15 years at Poland's largest utility, PGE. Her roles there included head of strategy of PGE Group, and until end of last year, CEO of PGE's offshore wind division, PGE Baltica. Prior to that, she studied finance and banking at the Warsaw School of Economics and completed the SEMS International Management Master's degree. So a lot of experience and a lot of interesting perspectives on the Polish sector and the energy world more broadly. To kick us off, I would like to start with a bit of a macro view of where Poland and the Polish energy sector currently stand. Could you familiarize our non-Polish listeners on the state of the Polish energy market, especially in the wake of the European energy crisis that has unfolded over the past months?
Right. Thank you for that question. So I think we will start, I understand, with the electricity market mainly. And probably it will be good to start with saying that Poland is still predominantly based on coal for its electricity generation. It's probably one of the highest shares in the world of coal in electricity generation, roughly 70%, give or take. That is, of course, both currently, you could say currently it's not that bad because that coal is mainly domestic coal. So given the situation of energy crisis and availability of different fuels being low, that could be perceived as something providing resilience, but the picture is much more mixed, I think, in this case. So apart from that, of course, we had for the past few years very rapid renewables growth, mostly solar PVs, fueled by both subsidies for large plants in forms of contracts for difference and net metering for rooftop solar, which has grown very nicely and surpassed all government expectations. We passed the 10 gigawatts mark in solar PV in May, and that was envisaged, I think, to be passed sometime in the 30s by the government's energy policy. So that's been growing quite nicely, and the story is positive here. And of course, Poland is on the pathway to decarbonization and to reducing the share of coal from electricity generation. It will take some time still, but it is on the right pathway. The second biggest now renewable source is wind onshore. And here the picture is still kind of gloomy, although starting to look better. We've had this for now 6 years. We've had this law in place in Poland that was basically stifling all growth in wind, onshore wind installations. So what we have now is, which is a bit more than 7 gigawatts, is mainly fueled by previous regulatory environment before that law was introduced. This is the notorious, famous, as you wish, 10H law, which forbids installing wind farms close to homes and neighborhoods, basically. It has been now proposed to be changed, and actually last week was forwarded to the parliament and was supposed to be voted on this week. We'll see about that. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It's one of the biggest things that Poland should be doing now is, of course, even more, putting even more pressure on expanding renewables very quickly. And the third biggest, sort of future biggest energy source when it comes to renewables will be on offshore wind, which I worked on as well, as you mentioned before. And this one is probably the least contested, at least for now, and is a prominent feature of energy policy. Close to 6 gigawatts should be in place in a few years' time. It's under advanced development right now. Other than that, coming back maybe to the sort of this crisis situation now, heat pumps are growing quite nicely. So that's a positive. We've got these government-funded programs for replacing coal boilers, mainly in individual houses. And I think the last numbers I saw, 60% of those replacements were into heat pumps. Mm. So it's not too bad. As the whole Europe now, we are facing the problems of basically, first of all, high prices, second of all, availability of different fuels and energy sources coming this winter. And that's causing many sometimes erratic steps and sometimes not too best, not the best policies, if you will, on the parts of governments. Everybody's panicking, basically. And that's probably understandable, given the breadth and depth of the crisis that we have.
Yeah, and we'll get onto that, but especially following the debate in various European countries and also the European Commission, certainly the Polish government isn't the only one that is panicking right now. To dig a bit deeper on something you said, you mentioned a lot of intermittent renewables being built, especially the boom in PV, but also the boom in heat pumps. Are the grids coping with that? Anecdotally, we're hearing from developers that it's getting much harder to secure grid connections for projects. How is this looking at the household level with all the heat pump build out? The ESO's grid expansion plans sufficient?
Well, for these grid connections not being given out, I think, you know, the picture is more mixed because they've been so many of them already awarded that there is a limit. Someday you hit a limit until you expand the grids again. And I think actually, at least on the TSO part, on the transmission operator, they are quite well prepared for what's coming. I think they have a very robust grid development plan in place, or almost to be in place, because it's waiting to be confirmed by the regulatory office. I believe has not been yet, but it is a very robust plan that envisages 50% of renewables in the fuel mix in 10 years' time. And they said the grid will cope. So they really did their homework, if you will. On the distribution level, probably the picture is more mixed, but I think it takes maybe somewhat more time. But then there are many more, availabilities of different ways to cope with the bottlenecks. You can install some storage solutions in certain parts of the distribution grid. You can finally, hopefully, will develop more flexibility on the demand side. So the demand side response really will help on that side. And so I'm not too worried, but of course, you know, going even further into decarbonization and into the growth of electricity that we will need to decarbonize all of the other sectors like heating, transport, industry, grids will become a major issue and a major sort of investment arena. But I think, you know, it's always better to spend on the grids rather than spend on CO2. So that's the looking at the whole picture, because of course the regulators are always worried about tariffs going up because of investments, but they will go up much more if we don't do these investments. So I'm quite optimistic that we'll cope.
Okay, and but of course, for that to take place, you need the regulator and you need government to be receptive of the pressures that are happening due to the European Green Deal, due to the European emissions trading system being tightened, and so forth. And having worked with a number of Poland's biggest utilities for a couple of years now, I always had the impression that they internally understood it much better than the government would admit publicly, at least. Do you have the impression that this changed now, and government is working very decisively in favor of a European Green Deal?
Well, look, I think on one hand, probably most of the experts around there and most of government officials that deal with energy policy issues and then energy regulation understand these things and know what needs to be done. And they know that the only durable sort of solution giving resilience in the long term is basically renewables and energy efficiency. And these are the two pillars that you should be basing all your policies in the energy sector around. And actually, if you look at this very short document that was published, I think end of March, which was sort of saying, this is how we will be revising energy policy of Poland. This was just a snapshot of the sort of pathway of the revision. I think this the first bullet point or the first major sort of point there in this short document was renewables will be providing energy independence and energy sovereignty. And I think this is actually, and this of course is something that we understand and everybody knows, but in Polish debate, it hasn't featured that widely before. It was always, the renewables were always sort of this thing that was imposed on Poland by energy policy of the European Union that we didn't really want it, that was costly, that was, we had these targets that we had to meet. And nobody was talking about this resilience that renewables give, because not using fuels, any fuels, imported or domestic, gives you a certain independence. And I think this is the first time that in a government you can read this type of framing, that renewables support independence, support energy security, basically. So I think I'm quite optimistic. I think of course there are still voices that will say, of just coal is the best for the future, and just let's stick with coal, because see what happens if we don't, see what happens with dependence on gas. Of course, there is a certain amount of bitterness towards sort of Western Europe in general, Germany in particular, probably for promoting gas, or promoting, maybe not, it's not the best way of saying that, but at least it's seen in Poland as, you know, this was promoting gas as transition fuel was not the right way. And obviously, since it was mainly Russian gas, we now know it was not the right way. And this is felt in Poland a little bit like that. But and also what is difficult in this debate here is that people still associate growth of renewables with necessary growth in gas generation to provide flexibility. So I think there's still not enough knowledge that this flexibility can be provided in many different ways, not necessarily by growing a lot of, building a lot of gas plants. Mm-hmm.
And also that gigawatts of gas plants don't necessarily mean they have to run a lot and actually consume a lot of gas, right?
Gigawatts do not mean terawatt hours.
Exactly. But no, a very, very valid point on gas as a transition fuel. And I do think this is an area where Poland has taken a different and, in hindsight, probably much smarter approach than Germany in reducing its reliance on Russia through the Baltic Pipe, which is the pipeline bringing Norwegian gas through Denmark to Poland for our non-Polish listeners, as well as the Świnoujście LNG terminal. So it by and large, it looks as if Poland is much better prepared for a stop of Russian gas supplies. And in fact, Russia already stopped supplying gas to Poland a couple of weeks ago, boycotting the Polish part of the or embargoing the Polish part of the Yamal Europe pipeline. Do you feel Poland is now well prepared for such a situation?
Well, you know, as we talked before, there's a lot of panic and running around and scrambling, especially because of the crisis. Because the crisis was sort of two-sided. First, we worry about prices, but we also worry about availability of fuels and then possibly even electricity generation. So there is a... there is a lot of uncertainty, I would say, because, and this is a criticism from my side towards the Polish government, if I may, that there is probably not enough transparent information. And the government is really, the first sort of, the initial reaction of the government in any crisis is to say, it will be all fine, we'll take care of you, don't worry. And this is going too far, and maybe has gone too far in saying that, because this crisis is really unprecedented. And what is needed is really transparent information and really appealing to people to do their part as well, to save energy, to try and behave responsibly, to you know, I was even... just yesterday, I was talking to some of my colleagues, experts here on the Polish market. Most of the households in Poland now get their electricity bill only twice a year. Mm-hmm. So you will see these, you know, huge amount on your bill in 6 months' time. So that's not good enough. That's not the right, you know, way to incentivize proper behavior. And also, of course, these policies that will try to freeze electricity, gas, coal prices, that's not the best policy. That's what you should do as a government. You should support the vulnerable, for sure. And this group will be larger than usually, of course, with the depth of the crisis we'll have. But it's still not everybody there out there that needs support, right? You need to preserve price signals in order to...
yeah.
Entice the proper behavior, entice, you know, energy efficiency, saving energy. You know, we have a really unprecedented wartime situation. Yeah. And you would think, you know, I'm thinking it's been two years we've been, that's the third year or fourth year, if you count 2019, end of 2019, that we're living in a crisis, right? Because the COVID was a crisis, was also unprecedented crisis. So we should have learned that, you know, these times call for unprecedented actions and also call for sort of citizen response to the crisis. And we cannot always say it's going to be all good, because it will be hard. And we need to acknowledge it will be difficult times ahead. I don't think I have a very clear answer whether Poland is very well prepared. I think in terms of gas supplies, as you mentioned, we are quite okay. The Baltic Pipe should be finished by October. So that's just in time for winter time. With coal supplies, actually, it's not looking so rosy, because, and this is something for non-Polish listeners also, I think Poland is the only country in Europe for sure that uses huge amount of coal for heating individual houses in individual coal boilers. And this coal was actually in a large percentage imported from Russia. And now it's all stopped. So there is a sort of uncertainty whether the Polish mines will be able to fill that gap, because it's a different type of coal and so forth, the logistics, all of that. So that's a big worry, because that's heating, right? So that's heating people's houses. And if there is not enough of the fuel to heat, and of course, there's only so much you can do in a few months' time. You cannot, you know, switch all of them into heat pumps in a few months. You cannot insulate all of the houses. So that's a big worry actually now.
So in a lot of European countries, you have the discussion about heating with gas and that becoming critical over the winter. But in Poland, you have heating with gas and heating with coal that is becoming difficult and at least expensive.
That's the difference. But basically, and this is coming back to what I said before, this is basically about fuels. So we really need to work on getting off fuels and getting off of really this necessity to import basically fuels. Yeah. And here, you know, domestically produced electricity by renewables seems like the obvious choice, the only logical that you can make.
And of course, the challenge is how quickly can you do these things? So on balance, do you think the energy crisis and Russia's invasion of Ukraine will or have accelerated the energy transition in Poland, or would it lead to more coal, at least domestic coal, staying in the energy mix for longer, or a bit of both, that you kind of have a renewable plus coal system actually for the medium term and the gas plants that simply don't get built?
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about this. This response was not that strong, that we will now stick to coal and just switch from coal directly to renewables without any build out of gas plants. And coming back to this idea of gas as transitional fuel, I think it should be framed gas as transitional capacities, because the capacities might be there. They're quite cheap to build, and they will not be running, or these plants will not be running many hours per year. They will just be for really a short period of time, and they would be needed. And of course, now it's very politically hard to keep that that idea of changing this mix. And if we don't do that, well, coal plants are only flexible to a certain extent. They're not as flexible as gas, so it will be more difficult. But on the other hand, maybe this will help to look for these other options, like demand side flexibility, like storage, like expanding interconnectors. So looking for these other options to increase flexibility in order to integrate more renewables, because I do think renewables will have now really will grow very fast in Poland, and this growth, of course, will start probably in a few years' time, because even if we change this law that was preventing, the build-out of onshore wind, it will still take some time in order to get new projects permitted and built. And by the way, I think this is something that maybe should warrant some attention, that I really like the approach that first Germany took, and then the European Commission said in their communication that renewables should be treated as being in overriding public interest. And this sort of phrasing makes all permitting easier. And I think this is what we really need in Poland. It's not just removing the obstacles that we put in place before, but really reforming the permitting regime, really making it easier to put these things in place, all of them. Because this is really what we should be calling for now. And this is this would.
And is it happening? Is there political appetite for that?
I don't think it is yet there. But on the other hand, Poland did use this framing, for example, for grid investments. So transmission grids are treated as in overriding public interest. So this is this sort of regulatory tool was used before, and I think it might be used for renewables, but we're not there yet in public debate, unfortunately. But yeah. I think that this is what needs to be done, because otherwise it will just be slow.
Okay.
Too slow.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed. I'd like to now turn towards your career and talk about the time you spent at PGE a little bit more, because you obviously, as I said in the introduction, spent 15 years in senior positions at PGE, which is Poland's largest utility company, and then recently joined a think tank after all that. Can you tell us what drove that decision?
Well, many reasons, but as you said, 15 years. That's a very long time to stay with one company. So I think that's one reason that is obvious. But of course, it was never dull. I really had a great time at PGE, and it is a great company in many ways. I've always felt I had an impact. And this is what I always was looking for in any job, to really have an impact on something that is system important for the country, or even wider, looking at beyond borders. So being head of strategy and then also head of regulatory affairs, that made me, you know, or I could feel that I have an impact on something really important. And then, of course, these last 3 years, getting my hands dirty, if you will, in offshore wind development, that was also very fulfilling, because I could see something in a distance still, but something that will be physically built because of my involvement. So that was great. But again, 15 years, it's a long time. So I've been thinking about change, and I thought this was about the right time, because I think for PG Baltica, I really achieved my goals that I set for myself when embarking on that journey more than 3 years ago. So there were three major things that I wanted to do there. And first, setting up the company and developing the organization, advancing the projects that we were developing. And that was a big sort of goal in itself. Second of all, helping to shape the necessary regulatory environment in Poland, because it was not really conducive to offshore wind before. So now we have really a robust scheme of double-sided contracts for differences. You know, offshore wind is firmly set in energy policy. The transmission development is sort of tailored towards offshore wind as well. So all of that was put in place in the past 2 years, and I thought, well, now this is firmly, you know, firmly said, it will not be derailed anymore. And last but not least, the third thing was establishing a partnership with an experienced offshore wind developer that will help PGE develop these farms. And I was very happy that we landed finally with Ørsted, so the biggest offshore wind investor in the world that has the same long-term goals as PGE. So in the 3 years I was there, and I thought, you know, this is, it gave me this sort of, you know, something well-earned that I can move, to someplace else. And I'm really glad that I'm with RAP. The RAP is an excellent organization. And again, talking about this, you know, trying to have an impact, RAP is this independent organization, really, with lots of very bright, incredibly smart, incredibly dedicated people that really work hard to provide expert, independent advice to governments, to regulators, to promote, you know, better regulation, promote efficient and cost efficient, basically, energy transition. I think RAP is really a thought leader, and that's I'm thrilled to be there. And I still think, or even more now, because the scope of RAP's work is, of course, much wider, They're in US, in Europe, India and China. So really this opens up a whole new, you know, world, and I'm learning something new every day. So I'm really happy.
That's excellent. We'll talk more about RAP in a second, but for now, to stay on PGE for another little bit. For those of you not familiar with the companies, so this is the largest operator of coal plants in Poland. It operates its own lignite mines. It operates Europe's largest lignite power station. So really big on the conventional side, but also a major developer of renewables in Poland. However, if you put the two into perspective, the renewables part is still much smaller than the conventional part. From your time at the company, do you think PGE is well placed to make the transition to become a fully decarbonized power generator and utility?
Well, first, let's maybe talk a little bit about this smaller share in renewables compared to the share of conventional sources. Well, once you're this big company that has this legacy, basically, because it's mostly legacy investments, and you provide 40% of electricity in a country, and this 40% plus minus few percentage points were there for the whole 15 years I was there. Right, so this was not really changing a lot, and this was basically because of these plants were built a long time ago, most of them, and now you've got the renewables market, which is much different and very fragmented in all of the countries. It's very difficult to build a substantial share in renewables in any country because it's just totally different environment. You've got these many smaller developers. The project sizes are small, or different sizes. So you can really, it's a whole different universe of actors, basically. And and I was actually really glad that PGE managed to build a substantial, given Polish size of the onshore wind market, but I think we built 10% share in onshore wind market, which is really large if compared to some other European companies in their home markets. So that's not bad at all. Photovoltaics is a much more difficult, really. I think it's difficult for companies like PGE that is this big, you know, a little, maybe on the bureaucratic side, you could say, not really used to developing many very small projects. So we are much better in few larger projects. And this is why was actually, you know, the strategy pivot towards offshore wind, because this is exactly what PGE is good for. And on so big, you know, gigawatt scale projects that can be developed that need lots of resources as well, lots of, you know, capital development outlays and strong balance sheets, things like that. So I think PGE is well positioned. They really have now a clear strategy towards carbon neutrality. So I think where PGE will face probably bigger problem will be heat. PGE is also a big heat district heating producer in big, large CHPs in a few large Polish cities. And of course, the previous sort of plan for that was just use gas again for transition towards probably in the future some green hydrogen or other, maybe not the best options if I'm thinking about it now. And of course, this will be very hard now. So these investments in CHPs will be difficult, and that pathway will be bumpy, or this road will be bumpy. But all in all, I think PGE is really well positioned. There is a plan, there is a conviction that this needs to be done. So that's the biggest. That's the main point, that you know that you're going someplace and you know you need to get there. How you'll go there, what pathway you will choose is sometimes, you know, can be bumpy road, can be winding road, but at least you have your goal there, and the goal is firm in place, I think.
Excellent. Okay, great. To close off talking about PGE on by talking about the offshore wind bit. My main question there would be is how quickly can this be ramped up? Because Poland really currently has no operational offshore wind parks. If you look at the Polish energy policy, the strategy government put out by the government, it wants to achieve close to 6 gigawatts by 2030. Is that realistic? Given that the supply chain doesn't exist, there's local content requirements. Everyone wants to build offshore wind right now, so it's even getting hard to get the vessels to install the offshore wind turbines.
Well, I think that is very realistic. These 6 gigawatts are divided by five investors, and all of those projects have also international involvement, international investors that know what they're doing, that have established a relationship with their supply chains. And of course, as you mentioned, supply chain will be the biggest issue everywhere now. Not just availability, but also cost, because cost of many raw materials went up quite substantially recently. So it will be a challenge, but it definitely the plan is robust, and these projects that compose these 6 gigawatts are really robust projects, and they're in advanced stage of development. About local content, so these are more like plans rather than hard requirements, right? So you've got these you've got this sector deal signed in Poland, you've got this supply chain plan that you have to present to the regulator, and then you have to report on it. But there are no firm requirements. And of course, I would like to see, lots of, or the biggest chunk of the supply chain located in Poland, because I think it's really good for the economy, and it's really good for public acceptance and political acceptance of offshore wind in the future as well. So building a robust supply chain in Poland will really help to promote this technology going forward and beyond these 6 gigawatts, or even beyond the 10 gigawatts or 11 gigawatts that is currently written in the energy policy of Poland, because obviously the potential is much bigger than that. Yeah. And the Baltic Sea, the Polish part of the Baltic Sea, can really contribute to decarbonization of this whole region. So I'm not too worried. It will be a challenge, especially now that the supply chain is under stress, that the components are more pricey. But given the experienced developers that are there, I'm not worried at all. Hmm.
You mentioned the enormous potential of just the Polish part of the Baltic Sea, but of course, if one were to plan it in an integrated way and collaborate with the Baltic countries, with Sweden, with Finland, and so forth, you could raise quite a bit more potential. Where do we stand on collaboration on the Baltic side? Because at least in my impression, there's a lot less going on than in the North Sea in terms of actual concrete initiatives being taken forward.
Yes, that is correct. I think it's a question of timing. I think maybe that's my guess, that the urgency or the feeling of urgency is not there yet to really step it up, to really go beyond the normal way of doing things, beyond just radial connection to the shore in every country. And that's true. Baltic side is less developed in that sense, at least on the Polish side, because of course Denmark is proposing this Bornholm as a hub for offshore wind, and has already a governmental agreement with Germany, and I think with Sweden as well. Maybe it's not there yet, but will be. So of course on that side you already have these developments, and I think maybe there is a bit of a wait and see approach, that let's see how this really plays out and on the Polish side. I was really surprised in this grid development plan of the Polish TSO that we talked about before. There is this very curious part of it that talks about these hybrid projects, offshore wind projects, or hybrid connections. Mm-hmm. And it discusses the issue and it concludes that, you know, that they did extensive modeling and, you know, grid modeling and concluded that these connections in the Baltic Sea are not beneficial in terms of cost-benefit analysis for now. I have not looked at the assumptions behind it, but at least what is good that we see is that they are analyzing it, so it is under consideration at least. So if we say it's not there yet, we don't know what will happen 1 year from now or 2 years from now. And I think we are seeing a lot of progress on both modeling, both the thinking about grids in general, about interconnections in general, not just the offshore wind mesh grid, but in general. I was happy to see the recent announcement that Poland will be working on restoring interconnector with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. This is something actually I work on at RAB. We would definitely like to see more on that part, but I think it's not that bad. The picture is not bleak. I think we're getting there.
Okay. That's a hopeful outlook. Thank you for that. We're getting close to the end of the show, and before we turn to the short answer section, which we always have in the end, I just wanted to ask you one more question about your work at RAB, because we obviously talked about crisis response already quite a bit, and I assume that is a big part of your work right now, basically preventing the worst, or trying to prevent the worst. Now you mentioned the interconnection with Ukraine. So what are the non-crisis related things that that are keeping you busy in your current work? What are you working on?
Well, I definitely try to keep RAB updated on the developments in Poland and trying to further our work in Poland. And RAB is also very big on demand-side flexibility and on heat pumps, basically heat decarbonization. So this is what I'm involved in very much. And this is something beyond what I used to be doing at PGE and PGE Baltica. Ukraine, I mentioned, really important things happening there. By the way, I just learned recently, I think Ukraine is one of the most inflexible generation systems, for sure in Europe, if not the world. And it's immense problem they are facing. Curtailment of solar, just a bit of a side issue maybe for this podcast, but curtailment of solar PV reached 40% when the war started, 40% in March. That's huge. And it's basically because, you know, they have inflexible coal, inflexible nuclear, inflexible really hydro, because it's really dependent on hydrological conditions. They lost all interconnectivity at once when the war started, and demand dropped by 35%. So, and this situation was really, for me as well, a waking call, looking at really you need to provide flexibility in the system. So this is my sort of my really pet project now, not project, but my thinking is around how to provide the most flexibility into the systems that you can get in many different ways, because otherwise if you don't, you can be adding gigawatts of renewables, but they will not be running, and this will be waste of money. Yeah. So that's what's keeping me awake at night, if you will.
No, I mean, that's
and of course the crisis response and the different you alluded to the different ideas how to quote unquote fix the electricity market in Europe. I don't think these are the best ways. And the market is really working fine. What we have is a fuel problem, is a gas problem, and not electricity market problem. So
yeah,
I hope. Yeah.
We have a special episode on this podcast coming up where we discuss the market design and potential alternatives to marginal pricing. I very much agree that it's very hard to come up with something that works better, and many have tried. It's a very concerning debate. Anyway, it's not an issue we will solve in this episode, maybe in the next one. Before we close, I'd like to ask three short answer questions to you. So the game we play is overrated or underrated. So it's you comparing or your assessment of what the average person in the industry would think of three concepts, and perhaps giving a short reason why you think it's overrated or underrated by these people. But you can also just say it's overrated or underrated. And the first concept I would like to put to you is the offshore production of hydrogen.
Well, here I'm a bit hesitant. Sorry, I'm leaning towards probably a bit overrated, because I think hydrogen would best be produced close to industrial site where it will be used.
Okay. The second is markets as opposed to direct government intervention to support the energy transition.
Well, markets are definitely underrated. So I'm a big believer in markets. They're the best in delivering desirable outcomes, but of course governments need to set the right frameworks. Yeah. And I have a question for you: is auctioned CFDs, is that a market or is that a government intervention? It's probably a bit of both, right? But markets, definitely markets.
It's a very good question, and I think it's the on the CFDs. I think that's a debate we'll be having a lot in Europe right now, because of course CFDs, especially if there's a metric, or only if there's a metric, are one of the ways in which you can actually siphon off the upside which renewables can receive when fossil fuel prices are high. So I think this is one of the at the core of the debate we'll have in Europe over the next months. And then thirdly, we have energy independence on a national basis, as opposed to energy security through collaborating with others.
Well, I think collaboration tends to be underrated. I do believe, and I firmly believe that, and hope that Europe will show, you know, will show enough spirit of solidarity in these difficult times, and collaboration will win, as opposed to, you know, just closing itself, you know, ourselves in our national bubbles.
Okay, so collaboration underrated, national energy independence overrated. Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, Monica. It's been a really interesting discussion. I look forward to continuing to discuss these issues over the next couple of months and years, because they'll certainly accompany us for the time to come. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Hans, for having me.
That was Hans Koenig, head of Aurora's Berlin office, talking to Monica Morawiecka, senior advisor at the Regulatory Assistant Project. Do keep an eye on our podcast feed for more in-depth conversations with senior members of the energy industry. The best way to do this is to subscribe on whatever platform you use. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.